What is going on, everybody? Welcome to a special episode of the Dork Depot. Special because it's by myself. I don't have BB Nerdy with me today. We are going to be recording an episode tomorrow, ideally. Today is Monday. But on the off chance our schedules don't sync up, because that does happen from time to time, I wanted to have another episode ready to go. And I figured if nothing else, I'll have two episodes to release this month. So that'll work out just fine. Thank you all so much for listening. We are going to be talking about a lot of D&D stuff and also a little bit of Baldur's Gate stuff to start as well. Just kind of wanted to update people on my new Baldur's Gate playthrough. I actually have completed the game in its entirety and had some thoughts on it. I know the game is now a year old, but I've got some thoughts having fully played it now. I also am going to be talking about D&D, my homebrew session, safe for my players to listen to if they're listening. You guys can hear this podcast, I think, in its entirety. If I feel like I'm going to get into something spoilery, that's a word, it'll be at the very end and I'll kind of make a notation, like I'll be very clear, like, hey, spoilers from this point on. I can't stop you from hearing it, but I would hope, in the interest of keeping the game integrity a certain way and your level of engagement excited, you don't listen to it. I'll also say everything I talk about is highly possible to change anyways, so but don't be cheaty. If you're my players and you're listening and I say that we're getting into spoilers, turn it off. Don't do it. If you're not my players, continue on. But like I said, I don't know that I'll get into that yet or not. That may be an entirely different episode. We'll see. We'll just see how it goes. But let's talk about Baldur's Gate 3. Let me give you my rundown on this. The good, the bad, the ugly. So having played it now in its entirety, I played a no save scum game. The only time I actually did save scum, I think like three times total. And two of them were just because of TPKs where I got wiped. One in a dialogue, might I add. So I don't know if you would call that a save scum or just it is what it is, but that's what happened. And then I think there was just one interesting cutscene that I really wanted to go a certain way. And I didn't save scum it because I got it the first time, but I probably would have save scummed it, which was Shadowheart cutscene and getting her to renounce Char. I played as an Oath of the Ancients paladin. I broke my oath three times. For those that don't know, when you break your oath in Baldur's Gate 3, you get visited by the Oathbreaker Knight, and he converts you to an Oathbreaker Paladin, or you can pay penance, i.e. gold, to get your oath back. And the first time, it's 1,000 gold. The second time, it's 2,000 gold. The third time was 10,000 gold, and I did not do it a third. I was like, no, screw you. Because I wasn't crazy about any of the reasons that I was an Oathbreaker. I felt like for some of the stuff I did would have made sense and I didn't get penalized for it. So the three things that I did, I defeated the hag in Act 1, Auntie Ethel, but I let her go. But I let her go without Myrina. Like, I didn't let her take anything. I was just like, GTFO, I've beaten you up enough. And I felt like killing her would have been murder at that point. I don't know. I'm glad I ended up letting her go for Act 3 purposes. It worked out, but I thought that was a little silly. That was probably the most valid reason, I think, to give me Oathbreaker. The second time I broke it was the Ascension ritual at Kazdor's in Act 3 with Astarion. And I let the vampire spawn go to the Underdark. I felt like murdering 7,000 prisoners who were kept and converted against their will was a worse crime than just letting them try and live in the Underdark. Like, they're in the Underdark. They're down there. They're doing their own thing. They're not bothering nobody up here anymore. I don't know. I felt like that was kind of shitty, especially the way it's presented to you. Had I known I'd have been penalized for it, I may have just let Astarion ascend then. And maybe on my second playthrough, I'll do that. The third reason, or the third time that I got Oathbreaker, was probably the most bullshit. And it was at the Temple of Baal after killing Orin. Basically, you fight Orin and a bunch of Baal worshippers. These are people that worship a god of murder. They are murderers. When you have dialogues with any of the people standing around the chambers after the fight, they just talk about murdering people. And one of them said something lippy to me, so I shoved him off the platform. The other ones attacked me, and I got Oathbreaker for this. I don't believe that I should be punished for letting vampires go in the dark, into the Underdark, and then be punished for killing murderers. I felt like that was a really bad call in game design there. I don't know. I feel like they shouldn't be given any leeway. They are murderers and murder worshippers. So was a little salty about that. I did not pay the 10,000 gold, even though I was ended up being flush with gold. I had like 30 something thousand gold at the end of it that I'd never used. I wasn't giving this fucking Oathbreaker Knight any more gold. I wasn't doing it just so I could have healing radiance, which is basically what I kind of built my character around, was being like a healer tank, but I just pivoted. My other thoughts or notes for another playthrough, or for somebody that maybe hasn't played through yet or wants to play and still hasn't. One, do it. It's a great game overall. Let me just be very clear. Two, I wish I held on to equipment better, magic equipment. I felt like I was really pressed to buy things early and I didn't really need to, or the boon that I got from it wasn't really justifiable for the cost at the time. So I was like selling magic gear that I thought I wouldn't need. I wish I had just held on to all that stuff in camp. Towards the end, I had probably 20 other pieces that I saved once I realized that it was a mistake selling all of them. I wish I had just kept everything. It would have been nice to mess around with some of the other builds. I did the entire playthrough blind in terms of I have avoided major spoilers. I avoided walkthroughs and guides and stuff like that. I got stumped on one puzzle that I did have to look up just because I felt like I wasn't doing it right. And I don't know. It's the puzzle in the Dark Justiciar Lady Shar temple thing with like the invisible platforms that you have to walk to the other side and then get back. I was a little annoyed by that. Very clearly on the map, there's like a map on the floor that you can look at. And I was very clearly walking in those areas and it just kept saying I wasn't. I was falling to my death over and over again. I ended up just using the fly spell to cheese it anyways, which is what I should have just done in the first place. But I was a little annoyed by that. And what ended up happening, I think this is one of the ones I had to save scum, is Shadowheart died and they put her body on a platform with like the blindness thing around her. And I couldn't res her at all. Like it would not let me res her. So that was really annoying. That happened, I think, in a couple spots where just the res mechanic doesn't seem to be very forgiving in terms of like the area if you die in certain spots. So I would be mindful of that. Other than that, narratively, I really enjoyed the story. I tried to do as much. I had Gale and Shadowheart in my party for the entirety of the game. They never came out ever. The last spot was predominantly Lazelle, basically until she got kidnapped by Orin, and then I just played without her, and I kind of ended up enjoying it. I rotated out that last spot with Jaheira, Astarion, and Karlach, and I think Will briefly as well, to try and get as much of their stories. So, like, obviously, Astarion did Kazdor's, Karlach did Gortosh, and something else that we'll talk about at the end. You probably know where I'm going with that. Also did the House of Hope, which was awesome, by the way. That is an epic, epic, epic spot. That whole, the House of Hope in Act 3 is probably the singular greatest everything in that game. The soundtrack, the aesthetics, the dialogues you could have, the cinematics, the everything is really well done. I could have spent, like, I wish there was more there to do. And Raphael is, I think, one of the best characters. I wish there was, I probably will do a playthrough where I maybe align myself with him more. I think would be really fun to do. So I did rotate out that last spot a little bit. I would likely do the next playthrough with Will, Astarion, and then maybe rotate out like Halsin and Minsk or something like that, or something along those lines. Or maybe I'll get Minthara, since I didn't do that on this playthrough. Would be fun to do. I have one narrative complaint, though, and that's the end choices don't feel great. I wish there was some more context in freeing Orpheus versus siding with the Emperor. I feel like you're really pigeonholed there in either having to become an Illithid or, like, I don't know. I after the playthrough, I sided with the Emperor. After I played through, I kind of started doing some reading about it. I don't know. I feel like both options kind of suck. I wish there was a way to free Orpheus without having to fight the Emperor about it, but there's not. At least from what I've seen. So that's kind of annoying. That being said, the ending I was very happy with. I liked the ending. I wasn't a fan of the final encounter. I played it once and I was really trying to brute force my way into killing everything that was out there. And that's just not needed. And with two characters with Dimension Door, you could pretty much skip the entire fight and then just nuke the brain and you're done. Like I felt like the Raphael boss fight, the worm boss fight, underneath, in the prison, those boss fights felt way more interesting and satisfying mechanically than the final boss fight did, which is kind of a shame. I liked all the calling your allies and stuff. I thought was a cool touch. I really enjoyed the ending camp scene and all the interactions with everybody there, and then also the letters that you get. I was a little confused as to why Will had lost his warlock powers but still had horns. I thought maybe that was, I don't know, maybe I missed something there, but maybe not. I don't know. It was just an oversight. I'm not sure. But yeah, overall, excellent game. I did change Shadowheart to a bard. I felt like just the way my party was built, I didn't get a lot of use out of her, but I wanted to romance Shadowheart. That was kind of, I went into it with some goals that I wanted to play it as good as I could, a good playthrough, romance Shadowheart. I knew I was going to side with the Emperor. I knew I was going to kill Raphael. Like, those are kind of like my main things. I hadn't really planned on some of the other stuff that had happened, and I just let, if I fail checks, I fail checks, you know, whatever. Things I would do differently. There's a lot of things I would do differently. I don't think I would play another charisma class. I felt like between guidance and Bardic Inspiration, and a high charisma, and then I had two rings that gave me plus ones to deceptions and persuasions on my main character. I enjoyed being able to talk my way through a lot of things, but I also felt like maybe I kind of cheated myself out of some of the challenge in the game. I talked my way out of a lot of fights, or I talked my way into much easier fights. I would absolutely kill the ogres in Act 1. I saved them, and I convinced them to give me the horn, and then I never used it. I put it in my bag and never used it the entirety of the game. Same with the iron flask or whatever. I never did that. So maybe some wasted opportunities there. I really enjoyed... Oh, I do know the other spot that I saved scum, by the way. I was like running myself through my playthrough. I did save scum the portal defense with Halsin. I did fail that the first time. That I save scummed. I really didn't want to lose Halsin or Thaniel. And that was a tough fight that took some thought, because the enemies just throw themselves at it. I save scummed it. I put a little more thought into how I would defend it. Wall of Fire made it infinitely easier, because enemies will just run through Wall of Fire. I don't know. I guess when they have a target priority, how they get there is kind of irrelevant. So Wall of Fire was pretty abused from that point on. I probably will do an evil playthrough now that the new patch is coming out with evil endings. I'm glad I waited. I'd like to do an honor mode run, but I don't know that I really want to do an honor mode run. Tactician is pretty challenging in and of itself, and I don't care about golden dice. There'll be a mod that'll give them to me. I don't know. Maybe I'll do it. I would like to maybe do a monk build. I think would be fun. I've never really played monk in D&D or Baldur's Gate or anything like that. So monk would be cool. Yeah, that's just kind of my thoughts on Baldur's Gate. It's an excellent game, deserving of every accolade it won. First game to win all five major gaming awards in a gaming year. So no game has won all five of them before the majors. I think Breath of the Wild and like Elden Ring or something, I think they won like 4 of 5 and 3 of 5 respectively. Pretty amazing that Larian Studios, being a smaller studio, not a AAA developer, traditionally speaking, made this game that really just dominated the gaming landscape and is still dominated. Here we are a year later talking about it still. I'd like to see, after the credits, you get a really cool scene with Withers and a reference to some great Faerun lore in D&D with Jurgle and the Dead Three, which is cool, because it's like there's kind of those hints in Withers' tomb, and they kind of went right over my head when I first like saw them. It's like, oh, it's a statue to Jurgle. Nobody worships him anymore. And then there's like the nickname on the tome or on the tomb. I thought it was really cool. I hope maybe there'll be some content or some more plotline or something about that one day. I know they're not planning on doing any expansions or DLC or anything, so I doubt we'll get that. But I thought it was a really cool nod to that direction. And yeah, that's what I have about that. Great game. Voice acting, 10 out of 10. Absolutely top tier in that department. I think the voice actor choices were phenomenal. The chemistry between them, you could tell, is very real. The engagements between them feel so organic. The narrator, for starters, the narrator for BG3 is a YouTube channel that I highly recommend you go check out. Amelia Tyler. I wanted to make sure I got her name right. The narrator, she's got like all her outtakes and bloopers from recording, and they are the funniest, absolutely the funniest thing you could listen to. I would love, if I could pick one cast member to go have a beer with and just talk to, it would be her. She seems like an absolute fucking riot and stole my heart through the game in terms of just delivery of lines and timing and everything. So the voice actors, the voice directors, all really, really top-notch work there. Sound, music, effects, everything. Storyline, great. Like I said, the kind of one final choice towards the end, I'm not crazy about. I feel like if you don't want your character to be an Illithid and you don't trust the Emperor, you're sacrificing Karlach, which is kind of weird, but it's also kind of what she wants to. I don't know. It's bizarre. All right, moving on to D&D. We had our first session. It was kind of a session 0.5. I want to give you my rundown on everything so far, on what I've done, what I haven't done, what I regret doing, what I still need to do, and kind of a synopsis of my thoughts on the first session. I love getting information from my players too, and I've talked to them about the session as well. Obviously, my friends are all very nice, even though we bully each other, but they understand that there's a lot of work that goes into this, so they're hesitant to be critical of anything. So I do need to make sure that they are, you know, if there is a problem or something they don't like, that they communicate that to me. But I don't think we're really going to run into too much of that. I do have some criticisms with some of them that I'm going to address here and with them. Not any one person in particular, just kind of a theme across the board. And I think this is a good note for DMs to kind of harp on. We're using Foundry, virtual tabletop. We really spent the first kind of 15 minutes just learning Foundry together, moving tokens around. I still do not have a good understanding of it, and I've made it very clear to them. This is going to be a learning process, a big learning process for us as we go over the sessions. Probably the first, I would say first five sessions are going to be hard learning curve, and then the next five sessions will be ironing things out, and I'm hoping after session 10, things will run really smoothly for everyone, knowing where things are and how to roll things and navigating their character sheets, stuff like that. Foundry has a lot. It has a lot of customization. It can very easily get overwhelming with add-ons, and I kind of fell down the trap of like looking through add-ons when maybe I shouldn't have. I do like some of the combat encounter stuff I added, though, which we didn't even use. We didn't even do a combat. I felt like there was enough going on in the first session. I mean, they certainly could have instigated combat, but I'm glad they didn't. The good, the bad, the ugly of my D&D, my performance as a DM. Again, I felt underprepared. I feel like that's kind of a consistent thing for me, that I always feel underprepared. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that means I am preparing the right amount. I am very comfortable improvising. A large portion of my campaign is improvised in terms of how the interactions go, because you also don't know how the players are going to respond. And I'll give you a really good example of that here in a minute. I'm glad that I had some NPCs ready to go. I did something new where I have a list of venues. I have a list of NPCs, and I have a list of minor NPCs. So I have minor NPCs being a race, a gender, a generic look, and maybe a name. And then I kind of have like major NPCs or like medium NPCs. And these are NPCs that, you know, they may only encounter once in a while or once overall, but maybe they have a quest or something. I call them questies. These questies have a little more information fleshed out. They kind of have, I have alignments for them. I have just some generic information about them. Ages, I have quirks, and I'll give you one of those here in a minute. Just things like that, you know, professions, if they have a profession, you know, what kind of gear they might have. I don't necessarily have a stat block on the ready for them, but I have a generic kind of NPC stat block I use if I need to. That saved my ass throughout this entire session quite a bit, because there was one particular time where, so as you would expect, the players totally derailed everything I thought they were going to do, which is what I love about D&D. So the premise of my homebrew campaign is that the five players are cadets at an academy. This academy is designed to train adventurers, give them some policing skills, not to be police, but to kind of help combat the rate of crime in this country that had escalated over a 50-year war period, where after the war, as it happens, soldiers come back and don't necessarily come back to what they left. And I wanted some of that realism in my campaign. I like to make people think a little bit. I like it to be kind of heavy, and I like even my high fantasy to have some reality to it. And a lot of these soldiers came back and didn't get a soldier's welcome. They didn't get the hero's welcome that they thought they were going to get. You know, kind of life moved on without them. The war wasn't waged for anybody's benefit. It was kind of a mindless war that, you know, warrants maybe some looking into. It was kind of a stalemate. It was kind of a big waste of resources. Nobody is really happy about the war, and by proxy, nobody was really happy with the soldiers that went to go fight on the front lines, and they came back to their homes and didn't have, you know, the charming hero's life they thought they might get at the end of it. And a lot of them turned to being bandits and kind of starting these mercenary companies and thievery and just general bad stuff. So that was kind of getting rampant, and the resources were thin because of the war itself. So hence the Zeltenia Academy that was made. I've always had it planned that the players were going to have rivals in this campaign. It's a big part of the campaign, and they had no idea this was coming, but there was five other students that very coincidentally had kind of mirrored their party a little bit, where BB Nerdy is playing a homebrewed cat, a bipedal cat that a sorcerer made like sentient, essentially, or like brought to life. There's a tabaxi wizard. So you have a cat sorcerer, tabaxi wizard. Godo is playing a Goliath fighter and kind of leading point, at least for right now in the party, and leading point for the rivals group is a half-orc barbarian named Yvelda, who is also big and brutish. You have this kind of juxtaposition between all five of the rival members and the five player characters. And it worked brilliantly. I'm very happy with the design of it. I'm very happy with the engagements. My player characters, a lot more aggressive than I thought they would be. And they were a lot more aggressive with these rivals than I thought they would be, which has already kind of steered things a certain way. I will, one tiny little spoiler, nothing major, but you may not want to hear this, players. The player characters seem to be really set that they're going to need to save these rivals, and I don't know where they're getting that from. These characters are just as skilled and efficient as the player characters, probably more so because they're all controlled by me. So they're not going to get into any situation I don't want them to be in. And I mean, maybe they will. Maybe they will need their help. Maybe, I don't know, maybe my player characters are planning on offing them. I don't know what's going on, but they're really set on like trying to follow them. And I think that's hilarious. I don't know why that's happening, but I love it. I'm here for it. They're going to... You're going to waste more time following them and not doing what they need to be doing, I guess. So I find that entertaining. those NPC lists. So that was the only little spoiler I'm going to get into. Going back to the more open kind of post-mortem stuff, I needed an NPC on the fly because the party was really sidetracked on these rivals. So I needed a shady NPC to kind of emerge from the shadows, and I had a list, and I kind of have them grouped in general, not like tiers, but like if I need a shady NPC, here are my like lawful evil NPCs that I have on the ready, and kind of grouped like that. So that's where Edmund Coate came from. Additionally, I'm really curious to see what my party does on the next session, what the players do in the next session. They have taken a job from a pretty seedy individual, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I'm just kind of curious what they're going to do on this job, because obviously, when you mess, if you're working for powerful people, it's a high risk, high reward thing, right? So, I'm curious to see how they follow through on this mission, or if they get sidetracked, and what that may or may not even mean. I mean, again, not everything is planned out in my head entirely. I like to rely on a bit of improvisation, really reactive to what the party is doing. And I'm glad I do, because the party met Joyce. Joyce is a paladin of a religion that is up and coming in the area called Manathean. And she is very ashamed at having lost her shadow to a nymph. And that was one of my kind of randomly rolled quirks that I had. For whatever reason, what I thought was an NPC that my players would have loved to help, they did not like Joyce. They were very aggressive with Joyce. They were kind of blaming her for losing her shadow to this nymph, and they were very one-sidedly taking essentially the nymph's side without really knowing the full story altogether. They were getting some of the story. I was just surprised. I was really surprised that they were kind of dialed in on Joyce like that. Poor Joyce. So I called an audible, and I had the rivals step in and take Joyce away, basically, to help her. I wasn't planning on doing that. That was completely off the cuff, but the rivals needed to help somebody too. That's kind of the mission that the class was given, was to go do some good in the land and then report back to the head instructor. And it seems like the rivals might go help this paladin, especially because they stepped in because the player characters were not being very helpful, which presented this awesome opportunity for me. So I'm glad I took advantage of it. Which brings me to kind of my note for my players, and I'm going to talk to them about it, obviously, at session. But just as a general note for DMs and GMs and anybody running a game, and for players too, for all players, your character sheet is your character. And the information that you write down on there, I, as the DM, expect you to operate within the parameters. If you put information down on there and you operate outside of those parameters, you're no longer role playing a specific character. You are playing whatever character you need at the moment. And that's kind of unfair. And it's unrealistic in the confines of D&D and a TTRPG. Specifically, what I'm getting at is the way you role play based on your alignment. Now, I know a lot of DMs and players kind of scoff at alignments, but they are there for a reason. So if you're a neutral aligned person and your alignment is truly neutral, I expect your character to relatively be truly neutral to prospects. The Joyce thing is a really good example where I have a lot of lawful, neutral, or good, or a combination thereof players. But none of them really seemed to want to help her. And the neutral character was not neutral, was like very quick to pick a side. That's fine if your character is going to lean that way, but I just want to make sure that that's on your character sheet, or you have an alignment shift. Your alignment matters in terms of how other NPCs interact with you. And I kind of role play around your role play, and I expect your role play to be around your character, and by proxy, your alignment. So something that you may need to stay on your players about, if they're lawful good players and they're very keen to stealing things, well, then you're not lawful good. You know, or if they turn a blind eye to a lot of things, then you're not lawful good. I'm fine changing alignments. I'm fine taking the first couple sessions for people to figure their characters out. But I do hold my players accountable to that. So play to your alignment. That's kind of the overarching theme. I know it's easy to write an alignment down because you have this idea that your character is going to be neutral, but then your personal feelings get in the way when you're presented with a situation like Joyce and the Nymph, where you're not maybe being as neutral as your character would be, right? So, and that happens. It happens to everybody. It happens to me. It happens to my NPCs. Sometimes my NPCs, you know, I'm not always maybe in tune with the alignment. So that goes both ways. I need to make sure that what I put down for my NPCs, I'm holding myself accountable to. That's just as fair to the party as I expect them to do it. So that's all. Not a very big issue at all. Very minor, but sometimes you just got to remind your players these things. The other thing, too, that I'll remind my players and I'll remind players everywhere, don't ask to roll. It's one, kind of immersive breaking, and two, it kind of gums up the pacing in which a DM may be trying to set something. You role play, and in your role playing, the things you want to do will reveal to me what I want you to roll, and I will tell you when to roll them. I noticed this with one of my players pretty quickly, that they were asking me if they could roll this, if they could roll that. I will always tell my players what I want them to roll and when I want them to roll. I want my players to RP. So instead of, like, just an example, you're having a conversation with somebody and you think that they're lying. Don't ask if you could roll insight. Just say, I think they might be lying, or RP it so that it's clear to me that you think they're lying. And then I'll say, why don't you go ahead and roll me an insight check? Or if you want to deceive a character, you don't need to say, can I roll deception? You just deceive them. I know what your character did. So if you stole a necklace, and a guard questions you about it, and you say, no, I didn't steal a necklace, I don't need you to ask me to roll deception. I'm going to tell you to roll deception if I want you to roll deception. I may not want you to roll deception. Your role play may do the work for you, and I would rather lean on the role play than the dice. If you role play it really well, I'm going to give it to you. If you role play your story, if you come up with a great story on the fly on why you couldn't have stolen that, and you're passionate in your delivery about why you couldn't have stolen this necklace, why you never steal a necklace, and how when you were a kid, somebody stole your mom's necklace. And like, if you can come up off the cusp with something like that, I'm going to give that to you 9 times out of 10. I'm not going to have you roll anything, because I would hate for you to role play a perfect reason why you didn't steal this necklace and then roll a shitty roll and undermine everything that you just work towards with your character. So now, that being said, if your character has terrible charisma and terrible deception scores and you're trying to lie all the time, you might get punished for that without needing to roll. I might say, you are the most unbelievable person. This guard does not believe you and he's arresting you. Like, what are you like? I don't like dice rolling in my dice games. I feel like sometimes it's too prevalent, and there's already things that I know I'm going to want you to roll on down the road. So again, a general rule for my players and for players everywhere, you know, each DM is different. Some DMs may really want you to call out, like, specifically what it is you want to roll for. I just want you to role play. I want you to tell me what it is you want to do, and I will give you the appropriate time to roll and what I want you to roll, because it may not even be what you think. I may have something else in mind altogether. So you may think you're rolling an insight check, but I may have you roll something entirely differently. for some reason or another. It's never random. There's a purpose to it. But just a little food for thought there. And that aside, I was very happy with the pace of play. I was very happy with the engagement from my players. I felt like everybody was really invested. I felt like everybody's character was kind of coming to life towards the end of the session. I like that one of my players' characters, have kind of a personality on the outside that maybe doesn't reveal everything internally within the character or in their backstory. So I think that's cool. I'm excited to see how that plays out between them, because my favorite thing is to watch my players role play with each other and have their own discussion. I want them talking to one another. That's how I know I'm doing a good job. And then occasionally I'm going to chime in with an NPC or something, but I want them to make their own adventure, and kind of part of having a generalized sandbox campaign for them to play in, you know, that has an overarching story that they have no idea what it is yet because they're only one session in, and none of that is going to be presented to them in anytime soon, but they'll find lots of things to do and they can look in the places that, you know, wherever they want to look. So I want them to create their own adventure in that regard. I want them to eavesdrop on tavern chatter or roam around town to find people in need. I want them to check job boards and stuff, which they don't know about yet, but that'll be coming up in the next campaign or in the next session. I actually have something really cool for that for them that I think they're really going to dig. As far as storyline, my improvisation, very happy with it. Not to sit here and toot my own horn too much, but one of the things that I love about improvising is it forces me to make a decision and it gives me little time to second guess it. And sometimes I am my own worst enemy. In fact, I am frequently my own worst enemy. It's why it took me so long to start the campaign in the first place, because I'm always redoing things and tweaking things and going back over stuff and not feeling like I have enough and that I'm not prepared and I need to push it off a little bit longer and a little bit longer because it's not ready. It's not ready. It was one of the reasons I just said, okay, we're doing it this day, this time. It works for everybody. Let's do it. And I didn't move it. And I went in seemingly to what I felt like was very unprepared. Not familiar with Foundry. I was like, I'm not comfortable enough with this tool, but I know the only way I'm going to get comfortable with it is by using it. The only way I'm going to use it appropriately is by running sessions. So if you have that same mindset that I do, that's, I think, maybe a really good way to handle it. I improvised a few things that, like, I said what I said and I was like, shit, I'm going to have to honor that now. Like, that's a thing now I have to be aware of or be conscious of. The Joyce not having a shadow was planned. A nymph stealing her shadow was planned. Why that happened was not planned. That was all kind of off the cusp. And looking back on it now, I'm like, I don't know if that was maybe the best choice or not. Maybe the reason that the party reacted the way they did to her was because of my improvisation of why it happened. But at the same time, maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe that, you know, that is how the story gets made by these moments, right? So what I thought was going to be a party helping a paladin get her shadow back is now something entirely different. And now these rival characters are helping this paladin. And the player characters are very sus of the rivals and their means of which they may help this paladin out. So it's creating this whole other storyline now, or this particular storyline that I would have never came up with. And that's the beauty of D&D, and that's the beauty of improvising, is sometimes you just get yourself in a jam and you got to just keep digging. You dig yourself a hole and then you just keep digging and you dig until you're out of it. I think it's a good way to go about doing things sometimes. I did more voices than I think I really wanted to. I don't have a wide range of voices or accents, but I do think I have a good grasp on a lot of different speech patterns. And I feel like that's a really good way to distinguish NPCs. I need to be careful that I don't reach too quickly into all my bags of tricks and start having NPCs that all sound the same. So I maybe need to dial back a little bit of the kind of minor NPCs that maybe got a little too much voice love from me. I'm really excited about one of the NPCs that the group has met, Augury. If the name sounds familiar, yes, it is that Augury. Please, if you're my player characters, don't Google it, because you will find this relatively same questline, because this is a free questline that a popular YouTuber wrote. So don't look at it. I enjoy her as a character. I didn't really plan. Actually, I had her in the game and this quest in the game prior to having backstories done with my players. And one of my players' backstories now sits very neatly into her scope of the world. And I think is going to lead to a lot of fun. Whether, regardless if the mission goes good or bad, is going to create long-term effects for all of the players, some more than others. Or more impactful for some than others. So that'll be really interesting, especially with how chaotic this party is. That is going to be the other real kind of note. In fact, I'm just going to write this down here in my summary notes to go over with the players, is they're going to need to do a good job of policing themselves. And making sure that, you know, if one player makes a decision and says something and it's out there in front of an NPC, you know, it may not sit well with that NPC or something. That may have consequences for one of your party members. So understand, you know, what's at stake for everybody. If they tell you, now, if they don't tell you, then that's on them. So I will say that too. You know, if you don't say, like, as a player, like, hey, this NPC, I really want to help her out or him out. Or I really want them to owe us a favor, or I really don't want to help them out for this. If your character doesn't get that out there, you can't assume for the party to know. So there is that. And if you want to try and deceive the party and be deceitful about it and try and say, I don't think this is a good job for us because this, 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 and this, and try and get them to not do something on the guise of one reason when it's really another, understand that could backfire too. So I'm not saying my players need to do that or have done that or anything like that. I'm just saying, in general, for advice for players, you can't expect your fellow players to know what you're thinking or know the importance of something if you don't speak up as a player, either as a player behind the character sheet or in the character sheet, right? So just a bit of advice for really everybody. That's it. That's everything I have. I just wanted to do a little rundown on our first session and how it went. I think it went swimmingly, and also talk a little bit about Baldur's Gate. Now that I finished it, I think I will do another playthrough probably sooner rather than later. I really enjoyed myself. Just switch up what I played and who I played with and the style of play. And it's a whole new game, which I think is really awesome. I think my playthrough was in almost 90 hours. And I was very thorough. I like to read all of the books that I find and notes and everything like that. So that is that's what I got for you. All right. Thank you all so much for listening. Hopefully we will get a GOTIS and BB Nerdy episode out, which will also, I think, be D&D focused. Might be from the player side, I think, will be really cool. Maybe we could get one of the other players to join in as a guest would be fun. That's all I got for you. Peace.